The Athena Ensemble performing The Chimney of King René by Darius Milhaud. A little G minor music coming up.
Support for classical music on KPR comes from the historic Eldridge Hotel in downtown Lawrence, hosting a three-course Easter dinner on Sunday, April 5th, 11 a.m. to 5. Reservations can be made by calling 785-838-5503. And Eastside European, an owner-operated repair shop specializing in BMW and Mini at 9th and Delaware and East Lawrence, servicing other select European vehicles as well. More at eastside-european.com.
Here's a look at the KPR weather forecast. It's 92 and fair. Wind is west-southwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, clear with a low in the low 60s. Wind will be from the southwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Then, tomorrow, a few showers with a high in the mid-90s. Wind will be from the south at 15 to 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, a few showers with a low in the low 40s. It's 92 and fair. Stay tuned for more KPR weather.
You know those obsessive people, they make bootlegs of concerts, maybe like Grateful Dead concerts, that kind of a thing. They argue about these arcane things, like whether the version of Uncle John's Band from the Fillmore in 1969 was better than the one at Cornell in 1977, all that kind of thing. Well, that's me. Those are my people. 100% music bootleg nerds. Not with the Grateful Dead, but with Mozart's Symphony No. 25. See, I maintain the ultimate recording was made by Sir Neville Mariner, the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, which, incidentally, is the one that kicks off the movie Amadeus. This one, by Adam Fischer and the Danish National Chamber Orchestra, is also excellent. Symphony No. 25 by Mozart. He wrote that when he was, 17. A Waltz from the Waltz King, coming up.
Support for classical music on KPR comes from the Dole Institute of Politics, hosting the annual Easter Egg Roll with Dole, featuring activities for the whole family, April 4th, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., more at doleinstitute.org. And the Commons at KU, presenting the Kenneth Spencer Lecture with Patricia Ononiwo Kaishin, author of Forest Euphoria, The Abounding Queerness of Nature, 7 p.m. Tuesday, April 7th at Liberty Hall. Tickets at thecommons.ku.edu.
Now here's your weather forecast for the KPR listening area. It's 90 and fair. Wind is from the southwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, clear with a low in the low 60s. Wind will be from the southwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Then tomorrow, a few showers with a high in the mid-90s. Wind will be from the south at 15 to 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, a few showers with a low in the low 40s. It's 90 and fair. Stay tuned for more KPR weather.
Treasure Waltz by Strauss Jr.
From the University of Kansas, this is Kansas Public Radio, KANU HD1 Lawrence, FM 91.5. KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia, FM 89.7. KANV and KANV HD1 Olsburg Junction City, FM 91.3. KANQ Chanute, FM 90.3. And online at kansaspublicradio.org.
Now here's your weather forecast for the KPR listening area. It's 90 and fair. Wind is from the southwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, clear with a low in the low 60s. Wind will be from the southwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Then tomorrow, a few showers with a high in the mid-90s. Wind will be from the south at 15 to 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, a few showers with a low in the low 40s. It's 90 and fair. Stay tuned for more KPR weather.
Composers have tools to indicate how they want a piece to sound. The character, the dynamics, the tempo, these are usually left up to the conductor's good judgment. Some composers take things further. They get more colorful. Erik Satie's notes for one of his pieces famously indicated it should be played corpulent, as in fat. This composer used the titles of the movements to talk about the character he wanted. A moment ago you heard some of lively, and now you're listening to wistful. I'm Jake Armbruning, and it's Character Pieces coming up this hour.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Ryland Barton. Gulf Arab countries did not want the U.S. to launch a war on Iran, and they're facing some of Iran's heaviest missile and drone attacks. Now they're worried that the war could end with the entire region less secure than when fighting began, as NPR's Greg Myrie explains.
We are talking about a half dozen countries, and they all have their own perspectives, of course, but broadly speaking, they're very nervous about how this war might end. I spoke with Hussein Ibish at the Arab Gulf States Institute in Washington.
Saudi Arabia and the UAE have developed real concerns about the prospect that Donald Trump could say, you know what, it's over, that's it, we won, declare victory and walk away. Iran would end up weakened but radicalized.
So the Gulf countries want to come out of this war with guarantees that Iran can't threaten them.
NPR's Greg Myrie reporting. Iran's refusal to reopen the Strait of Hormuz is intensifying concerns about global energy supplies and what that could mean for food prices in the U.S. NPR's Windsor Johnston reports outside of higher fuel costs, economists say consumers may soon see higher prices on certain grocery items.
Higher fuel and fertilizer costs are expected to ripple through the food supply chain, but not all at once. David Ortega is an economist at Michigan State University. He says energy prices are one of the biggest drivers, especially when it comes to transportation.
So where we're going to first start to see this show up are on the perishable food items. So think specialty produce, dairy products, meat products that have to be refrigerated, so refrigerated trucking uses up a lot more energy.
Ortega says there's often a lag of several months between rising input costs and higher prices at the grocery store, meaning shoppers may not feel the full impact until later this year. Windsor Johnston, NPR News.
In Los Angeles, a jury has found Meta and Google liable in a case that brought by a 20-year-old woman. She accused the companies of contributing to her addiction to the social media sites. Steve Futterman reports.
On the ninth day of deliberations, the jury found that Meta and Google were both negligent, that both knew of the potential dangers of their apps, especially when it came to young people, and failed to take sufficient action or warn users. The jurors awarded the 20-year-old woman a total of $6 million. Her attorney, Mark Lanier, admitted that he thought the damages would be higher, but still called it a significant ruling.
This is a landmark moment. It will reverberate. I'll tell you this, if the jury had returned a no, the champagne corks would be popping in the boardrooms of Google and Meta.
Many similar lawsuits have already been filed against social media companies, and legal experts predict the verdict is likely to trigger many more. For NPR News, I'm Steve Futterman, in Los Angeles.
This is NPR News from Washington.
This week on Research Matters.
Hi, I'm Peter Fantozzi. I'm a second-year PhD student in the Clinical Child Psychology program at the University of Kansas. My research studies the long-term outcomes of children treated for cancer, specifically those treated for sarcomas, which are cancers of the bone and soft tissue. Physical activity can improve their outcomes, and my research aims to identify the key barriers that need to be addressed in order to promote physical activity engagement.
Why do we think young sarcoma survivors are less likely to engage in physical activity?
Well, we know with sarcoma survivors, they experience the highest rates and severity of chronic pain, and that their pain is the most debilitating compared to all other cancer survivors.
What conditions are we trying to avoid by encouraging physical activity?
Many of those conditions look like cardiovascular disease or metabolic conditions that can ultimately reduce long-term life expectancy.
Your study is looking at using smartphones and other wearable technology to gather data about symptoms, physical activity, and other behaviors so you can find patterns and design interventions.
Yes. This study specifically is solely focused on developing an understanding about what the potential barriers are and determining whether it's even possible to collect this data from their smartphones.
What are your hopes for this research?
Long-term vision is that we would develop an intervention through smartphones that meet survivors where they're at in their daily lives, delivers treatments exactly when they need it, and results in higher levels of engagement and physical activity that hopefully reduce the long-term burden of disease.
For more information about graduate research, visit graduate.ku.edu or our website at kansaspublicradio.org. For Research Matters, I'm Steve Kincaid.
I have learned the most basic rule. A film is not a concert. The music is meant to help the picture. That's Aaron Copland talking about his new venture at the time, writing music for film. But he must not have completely convinced himself of it because he cherry-picked five of his movie tunes to make a concert suite. That's what you're about to hear. These are selections from The City, Our Town, and Of Mice and Men. That would be the 1939 version of Mice and Men, not the early 90s remake with Gary Sinise and John Malkovich, which was also quite a good film, despite, you know, lacking this music by Aaron Copland.
Thank you.
Leonard Slatkin conducting the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra. That was Music for Movies by the great Aaron Copland. That very last piece was called Threshing Machines from John Steinbeck's Of Mice and Men. It gets considerably darker than that as the movie goes on. Fiddler and violinist Tessa Lark coming up next.
Support for classical music on KPR comes from Kansas State University, where K-State Extension experts provide education and resources in all 105 counties to support farmers, families, and communities across Kansas. More information at k-state.edu. And KU's Natural History Museum, hosting the 5th Annual Celebration of Women in Science, featuring hands-on experiments with scientists. Saturday, March 28th, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. More at biodiversity.ku.edu.
Now here's your weather forecast for the KPR listening area. It's 90 and fair. Wind is from the southwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, clear with a low in the low 60s. Wind will be from the southwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Then tomorrow, a few showers with a high in the mid-90s. Wind will be from the south at 15 to 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, a few showers with a low in the low 40s. It's 90 and fair. Stay tuned for more KPR weather.
When people ask me what the difference is between a violin and a fiddle, I give my standard answer, this line that I heard once, which goes, you spill wine on a violin, you spill beer on a fiddle. Just not my fiddle. There's going to be weirdness between us, all right? Here's a piece by Michael Torkey. He wrote it for violinist fiddler Tessa Lark. Sounds like it just came down from the mountains. I think a lot of its character you sort of hear in her Kentucky roots. There's three movements. They're called Lively, Wistful, and Spirited. Here she is with the Albany Symphony Orchestra performing Sky.
Thank you.
David Alan Miller conducting the Albany Symphony Orchestra featuring Tessa Lark playing a piece written just for her. That was called Sky by Michael Torkey. The Finnish Cowboy coming right up.
From the University of Kansas, it's your place for NPR News, Kansas Public Radio, 91.5 Lawrence, 89.7 Emporia, and online as well at kansaspublicradio.org. Support for classical music on KPR comes from Pines Garden and Market, offering locally grown vegetable starts, cool season flowers, seeds, and growing supplies. Open daily in North Lawrence. More at pinesgardenmarket.com/KPR.
I'm Maria Lopez. Now here's your weather forecast for the KPR listening area. It's 86 and fair. Wind is from the south-southwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, clear with a low in the low 60s. Wind will be from the south at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Then tomorrow, a few showers with a high in the mid-90s. Tomorrow night, a few showers with a low in the low 40s. It's 86 and fair. Stay tuned for more KPR weather.
You might think that Polska is a Polish dance. In fact, it's from the Nordic lands. This one is by Finnish accordionist Maria Kalaniemi. It's called the Growing Dusky Polska. Sounds kind of like a Scandinavian cowboy.
Thank you.
the Minneapolis Guitar Quartet with the growing dusky Polska by Maria Kaliniemi. Here's Kim Andre Arneson, Norwegian composer, with a song called There We Shall Rest.
From the University of Kansas, this is Kansas Public Radio. KANU and KANU HD1 Lawrence, FM 91.5. KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia, FM 89.7. KANV and KANV HD1 Olsburg Junction City, FM 91.3. KANQ Chanute, FM 90.3. And online at kansaspublicradio.org.
I'm Maria Lopez. Now here's your weather forecast for the KPR listening area. It's 86 and fair. Wind is from the south-southwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, clear with a low in the low 60s. Wind will be from the south at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Then tomorrow, a few showers with a high in the mid-90s. Tomorrow night, a few showers with a low in the low 40s. It's 86 and fair. Stay tuned for more KPR weather.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Ryland Barton. A jury in California has ordered that Meta and YouTube pay $6 million for designing addictive social media platforms. As NPR's Bobby Allen reports, it comes the same week as a New Mexico jury ordered Meta to pay $375 million for failing to protect children on its apps.
After 8 days of deliberations, the jury found that Instagram and YouTube were designed to hook kids and teens. The verdict confirms the lawyers' novel legal strategy to treat social media apps as defective products, no different than cigarettes or digital casinos. This could influence the outcome of thousands of other lawsuits over social media addiction that have been consolidated. Child safety advocate Juliana Arnold had this message after the verdict.
For the big tech executives, I want to say something. Stop blaming the parents. It's on you.
Meta and Google have vowed to appeal. They say mental health issues are complex and can't be blamed on one single app. Bobby Allen, NPR News, Los Angeles.
The U.S. Postal Service is proposing a temporary increase to some of its postage rates to help cover rising transportation costs. But as NPR's Hansi Lo Wong reports, the proposal would not affect the price of first-class stamps.
Mailing a letter in the U.S. with a first-class forever stamp would still cost 78 cents, but the U.S. Postal Service is proposing an 8% price increase for its priority mail deliveries and for shipping packages. If the Postal Regulatory Commission approves, the temporary price hike would start April 26 and last until mid-January. This proposal comes a week after Postmaster General David Steiner told Congress USPS is months away from running out of money. The self-funded mailing agency relies on stamps and service fees, not tax dollars, to deliver mail 6 days a week to almost every address in the country. With fewer people sending mail these days, the Postal Service is trying to address its financial shortfalls, in part by increasing stamp prices and asking Congress to let it borrow more money. Hansi Lo Wong, NPR News.
Deployment of ICE agents to mostly Democrat-led cities are a central part of President Trump's immigration enforcement crackdown. A new NPR analysis found that they also left cities with a huge bill, as NPR's Jacqueline Diaz reports.
In Los Angeles, the surge of immigration enforcement agents in June meant the LAPD had to spend big on overtime to respond to protests. Around $17 million on overtime for just 8 days in June. In Portland, a federal ICE facility in the city became a big protest site. And local police say their response times for service calls more than doubled because officers had to be at the building. Local cops were also left physically and emotionally exhausted. Jacqueline Diaz, NPR News.
A federal judge presiding over AI company Anthropic's lawsuit against the Pentagon repeatedly questioned the government's rationale for designating the company a security threat. The Pentagon targeted Anthropic after the company tried to set guardrails for how its tech can be used in war. This is NPR News. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt says President Trump's planned trip to China has been rescheduled for May. The trip has been postponed from the end of March due to the U.S.-Israeli-led war in Iran. She added Trump will host Chinese President Xi Jinping for a reciprocal visit in the U.S. later this year. Meta, the parent company of Facebook, is laying off around 700 people. That's less than 1% of the company's workforce. Meta has denied reports that it's preparing to slash 20%. As NPR's John Ruich reports, the cuts come at a time when the firm is trying to center its focus on artificial intelligence.
The job cuts span several teams, including Reality Labs, which works on augmented virtual reality, recruiting, sales, global operations, and social media products. This, according to a person familiar with the matter who requested an anonymity so they could candidly share information about the layoffs. The person says some affected employees will be offered new roles or relocation to other offices, but the job cuts come at an interesting time for Meta. This week, the company lined up potentially huge pay boosts through stock options for a handful of top executives if they can drive up the share price. Meta was also hit with a $375 million jury verdict after being found liable for failing to protect kids from online predators. John Ruich, NPR News.
Famous J.R.R. Tolkien and late night host, J.R.R. Tolkien fan and late night host Stephen Colbert is co-writing a Lord of the Rings movie with his son. Warner Brothers announced The Lord of the Rings Shadow of the Past will come after Andy Serkis's upcoming The Hunt of Gollum, which is set to arrive in theaters next year. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, investing in creative thinkers and problem solvers who help people, communities, and the planet flourish. More information is available at Hewlett.org.
music of trumpeter Kenny Dorham opening tonight's Jazz in the Night on KPR from his 1961 album for Blue Note Records, Whistle Stop, and his tune called Windmill. He had Hank Mobley on tenor sax, Kenny Drew at the piano, Paul Chambers on bass, and drummer Philly Joe Jones, with organist Pat Bianchi up next, and then a brand new one from a group of four female singers. They call themselves the Sistering. And later this hour, the great Cuban saxophonist Paquita de Rivero from the Vinyl Vault live at the Keystone Corner in San Francisco in 1983. Right now, organist Pat Bianchi, he has a new album out called Confluence with saxophonist Troy Roberts, drummer Colin Stranahan, and a tune called Dizzy's Dilemma. Organist Pat Bianchi on KPR. Thank you. organist Pat Bianchi, the tune Yar, from the new album Confluence. Pat Bianchi with Troy Robert Sanks and Colin Stranahan as the drummer. In a bit, jazz from Chicago trumpeter Sam Robbins, and also from the composer-arranger with a large orchestra with him, Naoya Ogura, and his music coming your way. Support for Jazz in the Night on KPR comes from Mammoth, presenting Cake, June 27th at Topeka Performing Arts Center. Tickets available through Ticketmaster.com. That's Cake at Topeka Performing Arts Center, June 27th. Well, here is a band and an album called The Sistering Four, women singers and songwriters, too. Loris DeLoach, Nina Freeland, Lenora Zimzali, Heilm, and Kate McGarry, and all of them had a part in writing this one, along with guitarist Keith Gans. It's called River Song, from The Sistering on KPR.
Hold on, dear one, this night can't last forever. Let the blues be one more river. You glide upon, hear the river song. You can sing along. Sisters are singing, they run to rivers, catching us side by side. We sparkle in the moonlight, we shine in each other's love. Voices rising in harmony, reflecting our hope and truth.
Sing your song out loud and clear, for those who've left us yearn to hear. Drawn to their light like moths to flame, truth is a sword, the sound that breaks all chains.
There's a stream under my house that feeds me, and no matter where it turns, it needs me.
There's room enough.
to join her.
Hear the river song
as you soldier on.
As you soldier on.
Hear the river song.
Hear the
hold on. Hold on, dear one. Hold on, dear one.
Can you
sing?
Sing.
The sistering Laura Stoloch, Nina Freeland, Lenora Zimzali-Helm, Kate McGarry, they wrote that one. Called it River Song. They had the writing assistance of the guitarist there, Keith Gans. John Brown was playing bass. And some other fine folks involved in this one as well. The piano work by Mika Hiyama. And we've got new music from Chicago from trumpeter Sam Robinson up next. One from the Vinyl Vault from the great Cuban saxophonist Paquito de Rivera later this hour. We're here and we are Kansas Public Radio from the University of Kansas, 91.5 Lawrence, 91.3 Junction City, online at kansaspublicradio.org. You know, there's all sorts of stuff to do at the KPR website. Check up on the latest news and weather, stream our programming on your PC or smartphone, enter CD giveaways, and listen to music on demand from our performance studio, all waiting for you at kansaspublicradio.org. Trumpeter Sam Robinson from the Chicago scene, a new album called Chasing the Dream, and his tune called Sam's Dig on KPR.
Thank you.
Trumpeter Sam Robinson's new album, Chasing the Dream. He called that tune Sam's Dig. Sounded to me like, based on Sweet Georgia Brown chord changes, but I'm no pro, but that's what it sounded like to me anyway. Scott Angst on tenor sax, Aaron Kring's bass, Jack Macklin guitar, and Chase Wilkins on drums. And Stan Kessler, if you're listening, you can let me know if I'm wrong, and I'm sure you will. Let's hear from music from a wonderful Japanese composer and arranger and also trumpet player, Naoya Ogura, and his new album, Colors of a Journey. He's assembled a wonderful band to play his music. And this is his composition and arrangement called The Place Where I Used to Be. It's the only piece in the album where he takes a trumpet solo, and he's joined on the solo stage by Andrew Gostoskis on Barry Sax, Tim Armacost on tenor sax, and as well Joe Martin on the bass. It's Naoya Ogura's tune, The Place Where I Used to Be. The music of composer, arranger, and trumpeter too, Naoya Ogura, in his large ensemble album, Colors of a Journey, came out late last year. And his composition and arrangement, The Place Where I Used to Be, he soloed on trumpet, Andrew Gutauskas and Tim Armacost feature on Barry and tenor saxophones, and drummer Joe Martin. Before the hour's up, some mid-50s jazz from trombonist Eddie Burt. And up next, out of the vinyl vault, the LP, Paquito de Rivera live at Keystone Corner, that famous San Francisco jazz club in 1983. And what a band, Gladil Roditi on trumpet and valve trombone, keyboards by Carlos Franzetti, the bassist Steve Bailey, the drummer Ignacio Barroa, and Daniel Ponce on congas. And Paquito de Rivera's tune called Havana, New York on KPR.
Thank you. table, guys.
Alto saxophone, Paquito de Rivera. He had his band on fire at the Keystone Corner in San Francisco from our vinyl vault, the LP, live at Keystone Corner from 1983, that piece called Havana, New York. And it featured there near the end, as you could hear Paquito say, the conga drumming of Daniel Ponce, trumpet by Claudio Roditi, keyboards Carlos Franzetti, bassist Steve Bailey, drummer Ignacio Barroa, and that passionate alto saxophone playing of Paquito de Rivera here on KPR. Another from the Vinyl Vault next hour in a groovy vein from Richard Groove Holmes out of the Vinyl Vault from 1965. Also next hour, saxophonist Dmitry Baevsky, a new one from guitarist Alex Wentz, and an absolute classic from the late 50s Miles Davis sextet. That and more headed your way on KPR. But let's get a taste of mid-50s jazz. An album on Savoy Records called Encore, featuring trombonist Eddie Burt. And we're going to hear him in a musical conversation with tenor saxophonist J.R. Monterose. In fact, the tune is called Conversation. They're joined by Hank Jones, Clyde Lombard, and Kenny Clark. And the piano, bass, and drums, Eddie Burt with J.R. Monterose on KPR.
Thank you.
From trombonist Eddie Burt, the 1955 recording for Savoy Records, the album Encore, and that tune Conversation, the conversation between Eddie Burt and tenor saxophonist J.R. Monterose, with Hank Jones at the piano, Clyde Lombardi on bass, and Kenny Clark as the drummer, for you here on Jazz in the Night on Kansas Public Radio.
A recent survey found that nearly three-quarters of people in the U.S. are worried about whether the news they see online is real or faked. We get it. So at Morning Edition, our team makes sure every detail we report is fact-checked.
The non-budget office has crunched the numbers, and they found that it will cost the federal government about...
Don't worry about separating fact from fiction. Fake-proof your mornings every weekday with Morning Edition from NPR News.
Morning Edition, here for you 5 to 9 weekday mornings on KPR. We're here and we are Kansas Public Radio from the University of Kansas, KANU and KANU HD1 Lawrence 91.5, KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia 89.7, KANV and KANV HD1 Allsburg Junction City 91.3, KANQ Chanute 90.3. Listen online at kansaspublicradio.org or tell your smart speaker to play Kansas Public Radio. More jazz after the news. Support for news on KPR comes from Love Garden Sounds, buying and selling compact discs, vinyl records, stereo equipment, and more at 822 Mass Street in Lawrence. More at lovegardensounds.com. Saxophonist Dmitry Baevsky, one of the many wonderful emigres from Russia on our jazz scene, especially in New York City. Dmitry came from St. Petersburg, his birthplace, to New York about 20 years ago on a full scholarship to the New School in Manhattan in New York City, and stayed and made a lot of great jazz. We're going to hear, makes a lot of great jazz too. We're going to hear him from back in 2014, right after NPR News Update. We've also got a brand new one from guitarist Alec Wintz and a classic from Miles Davis. That and more on the way here on KPR's Jazz in the Night. First, this news update.
Live from NPR News, I'm Giles Snyder. It's still not clear what's going on with negotiations between the U.S. and Iran to end the war, NPR's Mara Liasson reports.
White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt said talks continue and that they are, quote, productive. But according to Iranian state media, Tehran has rejected a U.S. proposal, quoting a senior Iranian security official who says Iran will end the war when its conditions are met. Those conditions include the right of Iran to control the Strait of Hormuz. Iran has refused President Trump's demands to reopen the strait to oil and gas shipments. Trump has made a series of other demands, sometimes contradictory. They include unconditional surrender, regime change, a hand in picking Iran's next leader, and an end to Iran's nuclear weapons program. When asked about the possibility of more talks this weekend, Leavitt said nothing has been officially announced. Mara Liasson, NPR News, the White House.
Iran's foreign minister appeared on state television Wednesday saying messages have been exchanged through mediators, but that does not mean negotiations are being held with the U.S. Abbas Araghchi said Iran has no intention of holding talks for now. The Iran war is driving gas prices higher, prices inching closer to the $4 a gallon mark, as NPR Scott Horsley reports.
45% of Americans say they're concerned about being able to afford gasoline in the coming months. That's according to a new survey from the Associated Press and the National Opinion Research Center. AAA says the average price of gasoline nationwide now tops $3.98 a gallon. That's up about a dollar since the war with Iran began. Crude oil prices have eased a bit on hopes for a negotiated end to the conflict. The U.S. benchmark for crude has dropped below $90 a barrel. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
A jury in Los Angeles has found Meta and Google liable in a case brought by a 20-year-old woman. She accused the companies of contributing to her social media addiction. Here's Steve Fetterman reporting.
On the ninth day of deliberations, the jury found that Meta and Google were both negligent, that both knew of the potential dangers of their apps, especially when it came to young people, and failed to take sufficient action or warn users. The jurors awarded the 20-year-old woman a total of $6 million. Her attorney, Mark Lanier, admitted that he thought the damages would be higher, but still called it a significant ruling.
This is a landmark moment. It will reverberate. I'll tell you this, if the jury had returned to no, the champagne corks would be popping in the boardrooms of Google and Meta.
Many similar lawsuits have already been filed against social media companies, and legal experts predict the verdict is likely to trigger many more. For NPR News, I'm Steve Futterman in Los Angeles.
The verdict in L.A. follows Tuesday's jury decision in a similar case in New Mexico to impose a $375 million civil penalty on Meta. You're listening to NPR News. Crews in Hawaii are evaluating the damage in a neighborhood near downtown Honolulu. Residents there are cleaning up after what's being called the worst flooding to hit Hawaii in 20 years. A storm dumped several inches of rain late Monday. One National Weather Service forecaster says the ferocity of the downpour even took meteorologists by surprise. A group of Jewish faculty members at Harvard criticizing the Trump administration's latest charges of anti-Semitism against the university. From member station GBH in Boston, Kirk Carapeza reports.
More than 100 Jewish professors have signed an open letter condemning the Trump administration's actions against their university. The letter says the administration is weaponizing anti-Semitism as a way to target Harvard and other schools. Professor Stephen Levitsky teaches government and helped organize the letter. He says the group opposes what he calls a broader authoritarian project.
Jews thrive in a democratic environment with free, independent universities, freedom of expression, and broad protection of civil liberties. And this administration's behavior is threatening those things.
The professors are demanding the Justice Department drop its lawsuit. For NPR News, I'm Kirk Carapeza in Boston.
The major financial markets in Asia are largely lower in Thursday trading. Japan's benchmark Nikkei gave up initial gains, now trading lower following advances on Wall Street. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 305 points, up 0.6%. The S&P 500 gained 0.5 percentage point. I'm Giles Snyder. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Wallace Foundation, an independent, nonpartisan research foundation collaborating with grantees and partners in the arts, school leadership, and youth development. More at wallacefoundation.org. This is NPR.
Saxophonist Dmitry Baevsky here on KPR. A wonderful Cedar Walton composition called Turquoise. It's from Dmitry's album Over and Out with David Wong and Joe Strasser, bass and drums, back in 2014. Well, in just a few minutes, a classic from Miles Davis from the 1958 album Milestones, one of the great Miles Davis albums. And in a bit, out of the vinyl vault, we'll get groovy with Richard Grew Holmes at the organ from 1965. Up next, it's a brand new one. It's guitarist Alex Wentz, and the album is entitled Collage. We're going to hear the opening track, Pond Hop. Alex Wentz on this track with bassist Matt Penman and drummer Jimmy McBride. Thank you. guitarist Alex Wentz and his tune called Pond Hop, with Jimmy McBride drums and Matt Penman bass here for you on KPR. Brand new one from Alex Wentz called Collage. Some of the tracks also have pianist Victor Gould on the Outside In music label. On the way, Richard Groove Holmes out of the Vinyl Vault, a new one from drummer Jeff Hamilton's trio. And up next, a Miles Davis classic album, Milestones from 1958, the first after Cannonball Adderley had joined the band. Sunday afternoon at 3:30, it's Miles Unlimited at the Folly Theater. Miles at 100.